there we have it then, folks. The 2017-2018 La Liga season is complete. I mean, let's face it, it was complete about 2 weeks ago, but now it really is complete. Andres Iniesta has waved goodbye, Fernando Torres has waved goodbye, and Xabi Prieto has all waved goodbye as well. And we are left to examine the ruins and what shell of a league we're left with for next season. And welcome to Market English's Eye on La Liga podcast. To do that, I am your host, Mark Mayer, and joining me to do the season review is Ewan McTeer. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, really good. A shame we didn't quite get an Aguero moment last night, with it all having been wrapped up, well, several months ago, more or less. But yeah, it was a more fun last weekend of the season than I think many of us expected.
Yeah, plenty of goals going in at least, and the odd upset here and there, which we'll get into. As we go over the season review, we'll kind of be reviewing things as we go. We're going to go through our overachieving and underachieving clubs, and we'll also be giving our unsung heroes 11 of the season, because let's face it, giving our actual team of the season is a little bit boring when you've got Messi, Ronaldo, etc, etc. You know who we'll pick in that. It kind of picks itself a lot of the time. But we'll start on the title race then, because it has been done for so long and we've obviously covered it, but now we can look back on the season as a whole and perhaps sort of chronologically say where it was won and why it was won. And why did Barcelona win the title for you? And what was the sort of key characteristic that Barcelona could dig out to make sure that they weren't just clear at the top of the table, but so far clear as well?
I think one of the most important things was how good a start they had, especially after Neymar leaving in the summer and the Supercopa de España humiliation, if you could call it that. The fact that Barcelona started so well at the same time as Real Madrid dropped some early points meant that they always had a comfortable lead, and they were able to just go from there and just quite comfortably and confidently move towards the title. There was no need to pull several points back from Real Madrid. There was nothing like that. Atletico Madrid were always there or thereabouts, but I think for Atletico Madrid's point of view, they had about as good a season as they could have really hoped for. So for Barcelona, it was just a case of not slipping up. And yeah, I really think the way they started the season, getting several wins in a row right off the bat, was really, really important.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the table, how it stood in kind of mid-November, they were 4 points clear, but that 4 points clear was of Valencia. And we're thinking of Valencia now as a team, you know, they're going to be the Champions League group stage next year, they're a good team, but 4 points clear with them, and they're the only real challengers. It's not really going to be too difficult for Barcelona. And then just before the Atletico Madrid game that they faced at the Camp Nou, it was 5 points. That was, you know, 26 games played. That was the season decider almost. Winning that with that Lionel Messi free kick really kind of ended the title race for a lot of it. And at that point, I mean, there were 14 points clear of Real Madrid as well going into that game. So Barcelona did, you know, they've had it nailed from early on, as you kind of say. The one game they've lost, do you think that's going to really reflect in the history books as we go forward? I think that it's nice to have, you know, only lost one game. Obviously, the points difference, I think, shows that it doesn't really matter that they've only lost one. They could have lost four, let's face it, and still won. And it's kind of a shame that they didn't get that unbeaten season, because I don't think the way La Liga is set up with the quality of teams, basically, that it's going to be impossible for a club to get close again, or that close again, for a few years, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think so. And yeah, I think the way history will remember this season is Barca won the league and then that's it. Because, you know, the 93 points is a very impressive total, but we've seen far superior points totals than that in recent years in La Liga. And we've had a couple of 200 point seasons from Real Madrid and Barcelona back to back just, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. So 93 points isn't anything incredibly special in terms of La Liga's recent history. An unbeaten season would have been. But a season of just losing one game is, well, you know, it's still as close, as you mentioned, to going unbeaten as anyone's been for a long time and probably will be for the next few years. But it's not quite as special. And the other thing is, you know, they could have got 100 goals scored as well, but they got 99, just one short. And that kind of sums up Barcelona's season is, you know, very, very good, but just in every aspect, not quite perfect. And yeah, I think within a few years, this season will largely have been forgotten.
Now, I think the way that this season will be looked at from a Barcelona point of view will also be dependent on how they do the next few seasons. Because obviously, You know, Guardiola and Luis Enrique both came into Barcelona and had incredible starts, and they maintained that for the next, at least the next 2, 3 years. And Valverde, is he going to be able to maintain it? It's going to be hard to continue that with such a defensive mindset. Sometimes is the way forward for longevity. It's the attacking creativity that kind of dries up as you go on through the years. So I think that Barcelona are certainly my favourites for next season. If they get Griezmann as well, I think that'll solve a lot of their problems. But why wasn't there a challenge this year? What do you think were the main factors for, as I say, Valencia started well, then kind of faded, but they held on to fourth, so there's no way you can criticise how Valencia's season went. Real Madrid floundered early on, didn't really pick it up over Christmas, lost the Clásico, came into the second half of the season, did better, but still not great. And Atletico kind of chugged along, obviously had that boost in January when Diego Costa and Vitolo were able to come, had their own unbeaten run go for quite a long time, and then late in the season kind of focused on the Europa League. Why wasn't anyone able to keep pace?
I think, again, they go back to the way it started. I mean, the fact Real Madrid were so far behind so early on, it's not to say that they gave up in the second half of the season, but the fact that they already knew it was going to be almost impossible to win La Liga after losing the Clásico in December, I think at that point they maybe stopped a little bit. It's like any race, you see someone so far ahead of you and you maybe start to slow down to a jog before the guy in front of you does. So I think if Real Madrid had been within, 5 points at the halfway stage rather than the big distance that they were, maybe they would have kept going and maybe it would have been a bit of a challenge. But I think Atletico Madrid, their season really, I think, is very impressive considering that they had the transfer ban and considering they've moved stadium. In fact, they're in the new stadium and they've only picked up two fewer points this season at the Wanda than they did last year at the Calderon, which is actually really incredible when you think about it. But I think 79 points, that's the kind of mark that Atletico Madrid are, there or thereabouts is probably what they should have been targeting this season, given the strength of their squad and the transfer ban and stadium move. So I think Atletico Madrid were never really going to hit 90 points this season, and Real Madrid could have if they, if they'd been in the title race for longer. But the fact they weren't, they've turned their attention to the Champions League and been quite open in terms of admitting that.
Yeah, you can quite easily work out these sort of things just by comparing how, Real Madrid, for example, you can compare, they conceded 44 goals, which is more than Espanyol. Atletico Madrid had the best defensive record, as you can kind of expect, 22 goals conceded, only scored 58, however, less than Celta Vigo. So it does kind of unfold quite neatly when you look at it that way, in my opinion. And Atletico, again, next season, it's going to depend on what they can do in the summer. They're set up in the Wanda Metropolitano, but as you say, that's not necessarily going to provide much of a big increase for next season. But we'll talk a little bit about next season at the end of the show. But let's talk about the overachieving teams then. There's a nice little triplet of overachieving teams for me in 8th, 9th and 10th, Getafe, Eibar and Girona. And I think if I had to pick one of those clubs, I'd just go with Girona, because this isn't a team, Getafe as a club have come up and down. They're a bit of a boing-boing team, but they've had a fantastic season for 8th. Eibar, again, they've got the smallest budget and they've got 9th. And Girona, for a newly promoted team, I think in La Liga, it's almost unheard of for a newly promoted team to break into the top half, and being on 10th is right on the cusp of that. And the way they've gone about their season as well, they've had a good mix of kind of youthful, a lot of the Man City loanees, with a lot of experienced players like Christian Stuani as well. For my most achieving, or my best overachieving club, I would go with Girona.
Yeah, I think you're right. Those three teams all have to be considered. And yeah, those are the three teams with the three smallest budgets this season, and they're all in the top half. And yeah, you could take your pick among them. Eibar, once again, I think the fact that Eibar have overachieved for several years now almost leads you to forget how big a deal it is for this little tiny town of 27,000 people to be where they are. I mean, if the whole town had gone to the Wanda Metropolitano yesterday, there'd still have been, a good 30,000 seats spare, or 40,000 even. So yeah, this is a really tiny club, and for them once again to be where they are in ninth place and the best Basque club, which, speaking to a lot of people I know in Eibar, is a really big deal for them. This is the first ever time they've been the best Basque club ahead of Real Sociedad, Athletic and Alaves. So they're excited about that. And Getafe as well, the job Jose Bordalas has done there is just incredible, especially if you go back, not just this season, but when he took over last year, they were second bottom of the second division. I think it was about the seventh week of the season where they hit the emergency button and brought him in. But he not only saved them from relegation to the third tier, but got them promoted. And now they're in eighth place, just 3 points off Sevilla in that final Europa League spot. So I think if I had to pick one, I'd maybe say Getafe's achievements are the most overachieving. But you're right, any of those three teams, you could easily make a case for, because they've all done an incredible job this season.
And it is kind of telling that those three are there, and you've got the three in the relegation zone when it comes to underachieving clubs: Deportivo, Las Palmas and Malaga. Malaga have, you know, had a lot of financial and ownership sort of goings on, shall we call it, not in their favour. Las Palmas have been an experienced La Liga club over the last few years. Obviously lost Quique Setién at the start of the season, which was a big blow, and Kevin Prince-Boateng recently left them as well. But Deportivo, for me, are the underachievers here, because this is a club who have flirted with relegation for so, you know, pretty much all the entire time they've been back in the top flight. But they haven't wanted for investment. They don't want for good players. You know, you look at Florian Andone, Adrian Lopez and Lucas Perez, are three very decent strikers. Perhaps they're all too similar to play in the same team, but Deportivo, for me, probably the most avoidable relegation, because they've continually changed managers. The managers they've brought in have never been what I would call top-class managers. You look at Pepe Mel and Clarence Seedorf aren't ones that really get into a club and long-term have a record of success. So they're my underachievers. But, I mean, you could pick any of those three.
Yeah, I think you make a good point. They've been so close to relegation in the last few years that you feel they should know what to do by now to get out of a mess. With Malaga and Las Palmas, it was a kind of case of it just sort of snowballed and the season just kind of got away from them. But with Deportivo, they should have known how to get out of this mess, and they just seem to make a lot of peculiar decisions, almost trying to risk too much, trying to go for wild card managers like Seedorf, whereas you could have gone for someone a little bit more experienced, someone who's gotten teams out of this kind of mess before. And they just didn't. A little bit like Granada last year when they turned to Tony Adams, it was a kind of desperate, well, let's just roll the dice and see sort of thing. So, yeah, Deportivo, I think it was an avoidable disaster. And in terms of other underachievers, they didn't get relegated, but I think Athletic Club season has been really poor. I mean, they finished seventh last year, so this for them to be in 16th is a fall of nine spots. I think, you know, a new coach coming in, obviously they lost Ernesto Valverde, who's gone on to do really good things with Barcelona. So that was a big blow. And I think losing Iker Muniain as well for most of the season with a cruciate ligament injury, we have to keep take those both into consideration, because Muniain, when he's been playing, has been phenomenal. So I think that's maybe partly why they've fallen, but still very disappointing, I would say, for Athletic Club to find themselves in 16.
Yeah, there's a almost certainly going to be Eduardo Berizzo in charge of the Athletic Club next season. So let's round off the chat about this season with our Unsung Heroes 11. Give us a chance to sort of shine a light on those who have had decent seasons and have kind of gone under the radar a little bit. So I'm going to start with my goalkeeper. I've gone Paulo Lopez of Espanyol, because Espanyol, the fact they finished 11th is a bit of an achievement in itself. They've won four of their last five to jump up from being basically like guaranteed 7th.
And it's certainly not because they've been scoring goals. It's
no, exactly.
Because they've been keeping them out, yeah.
And I believe he's off to Real Betis next year, Paulo Lopez. Kept Diego Lopez out of the team as well, a very experienced goalkeeper. It's very popular in Espanyol. So I've gone for Paulo Lopez as my goalkeeper purely for probably one of the only shining lights out of Espanyol's season.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think Paulo Lopez has been really important for them, and it sounds like he's going to go in the summer, so that's going to be a massive loss for for Espanyol. In terms of other options, Kepa has been, you know, just quite consistently good for Athletic. And another one who I don't think gets quite enough praise is Neto at Valencia. So he's made 3.13 saves per game, which is the fifth highest in the whole league. And as much as Valencia have been good this season, it could have been really different had he not made, you know, a lot of crucial saves at crucial moments. They've won a lot of games by a 2-1 scoreline. That was their sort of favourite scoreline round about the winter period. And a lot of those games could have finished, you know, 2-2 or worse or whatever for Valencia, had it not been for Neto and had it not been for especially saves in crucial moments when the scores were still level, the scores were still 0-0, something like that. So I think Neto deserves a bit more praise than he's been getting. And yeah, it's a bit of a shame for him because he's been left out of the Brazil squad, I think, for the World Cup.
Yeah, Neto definitely came into my consideration for that. Valencia having the fourth best defensive record in the league, finishing fourth, does all line up nicely. Defensive terms, Getafe's Gene, I've gone for in a defence. Mark, yeah, Bartra totally as well. Two players. I mean, Bartra came in January, but you can see the improvement Real Betis have had since January has been notable, to say the least, finishing sixth. Thomas Vermaelen I've thrown in there as well, because I think he, in terms of where he started the season and where he's finished it, I think is such a massive difference. And obviously everyone notices that he plays for Barcelona, so he gets a bit of praise for that. But if he would have done badly, Barcelona's season would have gone very differently.
Yeah, well, he started the season as basically a meme, and then improved enough to come in and cover for Samuel Umtiti for the kind of 2 or 3 months that he was out injured over winter, and did really well. I remember, I think it was the Valencia game was the first one he came in, and there was a lot of fear, especially because how good Valencia were at the time, and he just came in, completely delivered. And the only slight on Vermaelen in his season is that he has still suffered lots of injuries of his own, but when he has been fit, you know, the Tom and Jerry partnership along with Piqué has been far from comical.
Yeah, and Lucas Hernandez, my final defender that I've thrown in there, purely because, I mean, Diego Godin is the established, fully experienced member of the Atletico defence, as we said earlier, best defence in the league. But Lucas Hernandez has been centre-back, left-back, and I think that takes a lot of versatility, obviously, but for a 22-year-old, again, is a real achievement that he's been part of that defence this year.
Yeah, definitely, and his call-up for the France World Cup squad is very well deserved. And yeah, the versatility and just great defending. There's been so many times he's just made impossible runs to catch a striker who's bearing down on goal and to make ridiculous challenges. He's just been, yeah, he's really improved this season, and totally agree with that.
Is there any other names you'd throw in?
I think you've covered all of them. I think if I was to pick just two, I'd again go for Gene and Bartra, because Jenny's just been there the whole season. The Getafe centre-back who gets the train to work has just been there all season playing excellently. And Bartra, you know, the before and after for Betis' defence from when he came in just proves how valuable he's been.
Yeah, I'd move on to the midfield then. Thomas Partey, I've gone for another Atletico one who, I mean, he's kind of like Vermaelen in a sense, where he started the season as a bit of an also-ran squad player to where he is now with his versatility, his importance. Diego Simeone does not pick bad midfielders. It's a fact. And Thomas Partey is fully deserving of his place in the Atletico squad at the moment. Lucas Vazquez, I think, is also kind of an unsung hero, because what he offers to the Real Madrid team is completely unlike what any other player offers. He gets just down the right flank, puts the ball in, works his socks off. I think his role in the team, if they were to lose him over the summer, and there's no sense that they will, but I think they'd miss him. And finally, I've gone for Mikel Oyarzabal as well from Real Sociedad, because yes, they've had a mid-table kind of disappointing season, Sociedad, but they've been one of the top scorers in the league yet again. And if you want a young Spanish winger to excite you and to produce as well, I think Oyarzabal's right up there.
Yeah, I completely agree with all of them. They've all had really impressive seasons, and yeah, definitely underrated. Completely agree with Lucas Vazquez. I think if he were to leave, it'd be a real case of don't know what you had until it's gone. And another one I'd throw in there would be Rodri for Villarreal. I mean, just 21 years old, he's been the sort of Busquets player in that midfield, and got his first Spain call up this season, and was compared to Busquets and openly talked about how he's sort of modelled his game on the Barcelona midfielder. And he does so much of that sort of defensive covering, but also just he's a guy that brings the ball out from the back and makes Villarreal tick, really. And then one other one I think I'd throw in there would be Carlos Soler. And he's been playing on right wing for Valencia all season and has been really effective, really quietly effective. But I think we should keep in mind, he's not a winger. He's never been a winger. He's a number 10 and attacking midfielder. But because Marcelino's Valencia play this 4-4-2 system, he was sort of shoehorned in on the right wing. And considering that's not his position at all, I think he's been really impressive. And, you know, they brought in Andreas Pereira as well on loan from Manchester United. And at the start of the season, you thought they might split those minutes at that position on the right wing. But Soler's just made it his own, and Pereira's hardly got a look in because he's been so consistent.
Yeah, another one to look out for next season, certainly Carlos Soler, presuming that he does stay in Valencia, certainly one that other clubs will be looking at. Attack then, I mean, I went with Gerard Moreno from Espanyol because, you know, if Espanyol didn't have Gerard Moreno, they'd probably be going down. Loren Moran I've gone as another one who came in from the B team. He's been in Marbella and all sorts of random lower league clubs, Loren Moran, and he's just had such a great goal scoring run, and it's nice to see that players, it's almost that sort of fairy tale every man dream, isn't it, to be given your chance in the first team out of nowhere and to take it so well. I think he's been fantastic. But Porto is the one that I think is probably a bit of a discussion one, because it was a complete toss-up between Girona's Christian Stuani and Porto, because both of them, I mean, Stuani's got over 20 goals this season, which is a ridiculous amount for a player who, let's face it, is I would describe him as raw still, even though he's quite long into his career, his attributes are quite limited, even if they are good at what he does. But Porto's the one I've gone for because I think he kind of embodies what Girona have done this season in terms of their, you know, their creativity, their spark, their overachievement. And Porto, who came through the leagues with them, has been a real asset.
Yeah, he's been incredible. And the partnership, you know, that Girona formed in that kind of sort of front three they have with Porto, Borja Garcia as well, who's been quite good. And then Stuani up front. I would go with Stuani, I think, just purely the fact that for a newly promoted team, for someone to score 21 goals for a team that's just come up is just crazy. And yeah, he's just one of the many incredible Uruguayan strikers we have in La Liga, with Luis Suarez up there as well, and Maxi Gomez, and obviously you've got Cavani in League One. It's going to be some decision they've got to make for the World Cup, because Stuani is just coming and showing that he's as good as any of them. And so I'd go with him, and completely agree as well with Moreno. I was looking at some of his stats, and so he's got 16 goals this season, but really importantly, 10 of them were the first of the match. Espanyol don't win a lot, but when they do, they usually win by one goal. And that's why his goals have been so, so important. And I think you're right, if they didn't have him, if they had even a striker half as good as him, I think, yeah, they might have been going down instead of Deportivo, or it's certainly been in that race. So Gerard Moreno was really important, and yeah, they're going to have to hope they keep him this summer, because yeah, life without him at Espanyol and life without Paul Lopez would be, yeah, quite bleak.
Yeah, a big summer ahead for Espanyol. Then what do you think are going to be the big changes over the summer? Let's round off this chat with a kind of a glance towards next season. What's going to change about La Liga over the summer? Do you think Neymar's going to arrive? Do you think Griezmann moving is going to shift around things in a big way? Torres leaving Atletico means that they are going to have to be in the market for a striker, I should imagine, no matter what. But they've already got a few transfers lined up as well. I mean, my two pence is personally that Neymar isn't going to come this summer. I think that PSG aren't going to negotiate a sale almost no matter what. And the fact that I think he's got a release clause that is €222 million next summer will mean that Real Madrid will just about understand the need to hang on. But otherwise, in terms of big changes, it's hard to really see where they're going to come from.
Yeah, especially at the top. I mean, you look at the sort of top three clubs, you can't really see any changes. I mean, Barcelona, Atletico and Real Madrid, it would be a major shock if any of them changed coach. The only massive transfer I can really see happening is Griezmann to Barcelona. So generally, I think the competitive level of these teams is going to remain quite the same. It depends how Atletico replaces Griezmann. I mean, they finished second this year above Real Madrid, which I really do think deserves more credit than has been given. I mean, this is only the second time this century they finished above Real Madrid, the other one obviously being when they won La Liga a few years ago. So for Atletico to keep La Liga as a three-team league, that's going to be really tough if they do lose Griezmann. But you'd like to think they'd have someone lined up that they can go for, given that well, Griezmann has been linked with a move away for as long as I think any of us can remember. So, yeah, at the top, I can't see many changes. It's going to be interesting to see that sort of middle ground, because there are quite a lot of, you know, big mid-sized clubs that have had disappointing seasons. We mentioned Athletic, but even Real Sociedad, Celta Vigo, Espanyol as well, maybe another one. These are kind of teams that, even Sevilla as well. Sevilla still got into Europe, but down in seventh place, 15 points off fourth. And that's got to be considered a massive disappointment for them. So it'll be interesting to see how these sort of mid-sized La Liga clubs respond to what has been, you know, overall a slightly disappointing campaign for them. And I think the way they will respond, almost all of these clubs, is with a new manager.
Yeah, well, certainly it's going to be a big summer at Sevilla as they get a new manager, Celta Vigo getting a new manager, Real Sociedad, as you mentioned. There's plenty to look out for in that La Liga mid-table, and it's always worth versing yourself. If you're a Real Madrid fan, if you're a Barcelona fan, it's always worth knowing what's going on, because you get a lot of entertainment, you get a lot of drama going around there. And certainly if you're not supporting the teams, then it can be more entertaining than it can be if you're supporting the teams, let's put it that way. Not many Espanyol fans or Malaga fans have found it that interesting this season, but there's been plenty to watch, and Mark in English will always have you as well informed as any on that. And we'll be ending the show now. I won't be bidding you all farewell, because we've got two little shows lined up for the end of the season. We're going to do a Champions League preview. That's going to go out on Friday, just before the Champions League final, Real Madrid versus Liverpool, of course. And we'll be reviewing that game, as you can imagine, after that. So we'll see you next time, and thank you for joining us.